Welcome to the Forgotten Narrator. They are the nameless dread, the silence where there should be screams. The Rangdun, a name half heard in scattered fragments, a shadow glimpsed between the pages of forbidden lore. In a galaxy defined by its endless wars and unrelenting enemies, how terrible must a foe be to warrant not remembrance, but total erasure. Not merely defeated, but unmade from thought, cast beyond even the graveyard of memory. The Imperium remembers everything, from the glories of the Great Crusade to the bitter rot of betrayal. Yet the Rangdun were devoured by the void of censorship, their truths drowned in a sea of sanctioned ignorance. It is in that silence that the horror truly grows. Only whispers remain, haunted recollections of battles that broke entire legions, of an emperor driven to the front lines, of weapons that unstitched the fabric of real space. They were not just an enemy. They were a revelation the Imperium could not afford to endure. But what truth was so monstrous that humanity itself recoiled from it? What did we see in the Rangdun that forced us to forget? This is not a story of war alone. It is a tale of fear, of secrets deeper than the void, and of the ghosts that scream when history dares look back. It began in blood, in a spiral of escalating horror that would come to define the early terror of the Great Crusade. The Rangdun Xenocides were not a singular conflict, but a series of apocalyptic campaigns fought across entire star sectors, each more cataclysmic than the last. The early records, those few that remain unpurged or survived only in myth, speak of over two decades of grinding warfare, where the might of the nascent Imperium was tested as never before. What makes these wars exceptional is not merely their scale, but their desperation. An entire interstellar civilization pouring its full strength into the annihilation of something it would later pretend never existed. It is known that the Rangdun emerged from the northern regions of the galaxy, possibly from the halo stars or even beyond. Their advance was relentless and alien in logic. Systems fell without warning, entire planets going silent in what seemed like hours. When Imperial scouts made contact, they encountered desolation. Hives flayed down to the substrata, ecosystems liquefied, skies turned into screaming anomalies of psychic noise. The Xenocides were not just about military conquest. They were wars of survival against something that shredded the concept of sanity. Every campaign fought against the Rangdun grew worse than the last, not because the Imperium was weakening, but because the enemy seemed to adapt, twisting both their strategies and even the nature of reality itself around them. Some battles were so catastrophic they are whispered of even today by the Inquisition and the Adeptus Mechanicus. The fall of the Morrigu Cluster saw an entire subsector collapse into a semi-permanent temporal loop, where ships would reappear centuries after being lost, only to burn again in identical fates. The Croesus Slaughter is spoken of as a three-month siege where 5 million Astartes died in 2 hours, the math of it unexplainable by logic or physics. The Rangdun did not merely kill, they unmade. Some reports describe their ships as void glass specters, flickering in and out of phase, while others claim to fight swarms of radiant things that sang in languages older than the stars. And behind them, always behind, was something else, something unseen but deeply present, as if the Rangdun were not the invaders but the harbingers. It was in the 38th year of the Great Crusade that the Emperor himself intervened. Not through emissaries or proxies, but in person. Something that had not happened since the conquest of Terra itself. Accompanied by the Custodes, and allegedly by the 2nd and 11th Legions, he entered the void near the Ghostlights Nebula. For 18 months, no communication emerged. When the fleet returned, it was less than half its original size. The surviving ships were charred and mute, their machine spirits broken, and their crew reduced to whispering husks. What had happened remains unknown, but soon after, the Great Purge began. Not just of the Rangdun, but of memory itself. The Rangdun Xenocides ended, eventually. That much is clear. The Imperium, though mutilated, stood victorious. Yet it was not a triumph. The celebrations were muted, the honors few. The legions who fought were scattered to new fronts with no mention of their sacrifice. The documents were sealed, then destroyed. The scars remained, of course. In the doctrines of the legions, in the strange rituals of the Mechanicum, and in the nightmares of the Psykers, who had glimpsed something vast and utterly wrong during those years. The Xenocides were not a campaign, they were a cauterization. And what was being burned away was not just a species, but knowledge itself. Why would the Imperium, a regime that thrives on victory propaganda and the glorification of war, choose to expunge all mention of one of its most harrowing and ultimately successful campaigns? The answer lies not in politics, nor in military pride, but in fear. A deep, primal dread that transcends doctrine. The Rangdan were not simply destroyed, they were unremembered. Not by accident, not through the entropy of time, but through a conscious act of bureaucratic annihilation. The Adeptus Administratum, alongside the Ordo Redactus and elements of the Emperor's own Librarius, undertook a total erasure. In a galaxy that records every bolter discharge, every morsel of martyrdom, the Rangdan became a void. The rationale was not solely rooted in the magnitude of the war. The Imperium has never been shy about cataloging horror. The Horus Heresy is etched into every child's indoctrination. The Age of Apostasy is still ritualized in penitence. But the Rangdan were different. They were a species, or perhaps an essence, whose very nature defied classification. They infected more than flesh or cities. They infected certainty. Scholars argue the Rangdan represented a conceptual contamination. That to remember them was to invite their return, or worse, to destabilize the imperial creed that mankind must triumph through superior will and divine purpose. Against the Rangdan, willpower shattered, faith quivered, even the emperor bled. The warp taint theory offers one angle. Certain Black Library texts hint at creatures whose existence bled into unreality, whose every death was a psychic detonation. Some inquisitorial records, barely legible beneath the redact seals, refer to cognitive contamination events. Entire regiments went mad, not from what they saw, but from what they began to believe. The Rangdan, it's proposed, could hijack logic itself. Infected scribes would pen theological inversions so subtle that entire planetary doctrines unraveled. The Exorcist chapter later developed resistance to such memes, but during the Great Crusade, nothing like that existed. The decision to destroy all records may have been a prophylactic, a psychic firewall against exposure. But others whispered darker truths, that the Rangdan discovered something about humanity the Imperium could not abide. Perhaps they decoded the Primarch genome. Perhaps they breached the Golden Throne's purpose. One theory, heretical in nature but persistent in forbidden circles, posits that the Rangdan spoke to the Emperor, not in words but in truths. They showed him a future that could not be allowed. A vision that drove him to personally oversee their eradication and, more damningly, to ensure no human mind would ever recall what had been seen. The wiping of history was not an act of revenge. It was mercy, a desperate attempt to shelter the species from a knowledge that could unmake it. It is telling that those few fragments remaining in Mechanicum vaults, black ship transcripts, or shattered cogitators floating in derelicts are always fragmented, always self-destructing, always incomplete. It's as if the data itself resists permanence, as if the Rangdan left behind not ruins, but conceptual poison. To remember them is to risk contamination. To study them is to awaken some echo, to hear a whisper from the dark beyond the veil. This is not simply historical redaction, it is spiritual quarantine. And the true horror? It worked. Ask the average citizen of the Imperium about the Rangdan, and they will blink in confusion. Ask a planetary governor, a lord militant, even a veteran of 100 crusades. You will receive blank stares or swift denouncements. The Imperium erased the Rangdan, not because it won, but because it nearly lost everything that made it human. The silence is not cowardice. It is a scar sutured shut, hiding a wound that still bleeds in the places no light ever touches. There is no single, unchallenged answer to the question, what were the Rangdan? Canon leaves only the charred outlines, the scorched shapes of their passage through history. Yet from these shadows, fan theories and speculative reconstructions have emerged, like forensic autopsies of a murder committed against truth itself. Some whisper they were not even a species in the way we understand the term, but a phenomenon, a convergence of anomalous entities masquerading as life, or worse, a collective will given monstrous form. Others imagine them as remnants of the war in heaven, a final, terrible echo of the Old One's lost creations. One school of thought posits that the Rangdan were hyper-evolved Xenos, entities millions of years older than mankind, whose biological evolution had transcended the boundaries of known science. In this vision, they were post-organic, beings of radiant matter and exotic particles, whose appearance was said to induce vertigo and hemorrhaging in unshielded observers. Their physical forms were mutable, as though perception itself shaped their anatomy. Those who support this theory point to vague reports of Rangdan morphologies shifting mid-combat, their structures adapting like living equations written in the language of entropy. Another possibility is that the Rangdan were interdimensional or extragalactic. Their appearance during the Great Crusade coincides eerily with the expansion of warp exploration and the Emperor's drive to reconnect the galaxy. Perhaps they came not from beyond the stars, but from beyond reality, piercing through from some realm where causality is optional. Some Mechanicus Lex Mechanics believe the Rangdan were echoes of another cosmology, a failed universe brushing against ours like a rusted cog grinding against pristine machinery. This theory aligns with reports of time dilation, anti-chronological events, and mass data corruption that accompanied Rangdan engagements. There is also the Old One Remnant theory, the idea that the Rangdan were either survivors or corrupted tools of the long-dead Old Ones, their purpose forgotten, but their power intact. If true, it would explain their arcane knowledge, their mastery of both physical and psychic realms, and their capacity to warp the fabric of space. More chillingly, it could suggest that the Necrons were not the only sleeping legacy of that primeval war. Some believe the Rangdan were guardians or jailers, or worse, avengers, entities awakened by the spread of humanity, programmed to resist the rebirth of another dominant species. Yet among all these is one theory more feared than all others, that the Rangdan were not alien, but future. A divergent branch of humanity, evolved or manipulated far beyond recognition. This theory holds that the Rangdan were the end state of unchecked psychic development, transhuman ruin born of our own gene craft, perhaps even an offshoot from a failed version of the Emperor's Primarch project. If this is true, then the Xenocides were not a war against the other, but a war against what we might one day become, a culling of possible futures that could unmake the present. Regardless of their origin, all theories agree on one thing. The Rangdan represented a categorical threat, not a political rival or a planetary pestilence, but a metaphysical wrongness, a defiance of the natural order, an abomination that made even the Emperor act not with calculation, but urgency. They were a paradox given flesh, a thing whose very existence was incompatible with mankind's dream of dominion. To destroy them was to reaffirm reality itself. To remember them might be to break it, and so we are left only with conjecture. But in that silence, in that desperate attempt to unknow the Rangdan, the true shape of the threat becomes clear. It is not that they were powerful, it is that they changed those who fought them, not just physically, but ontologically. The erasure was not just of data, it was of infection, a quarantine not of a species, but of an idea too terrible to let live. Among the most disturbing implications surrounding the Rangdan is the idea that they were not simply enemies in space, but insurgents in time. The notion of temporal warfare, of conflict waged not along lines of territory, but through the manipulation of causality, is usually confined to the domain of theoretical Mechanicus heretics and forbidden black ship scribes. Yet the Rangdan, if some accounts are to be believed, operated with a fluency in chronoviolation that made conventional warfare obsolete. They were not bound by the sequence of cause and effect. They could be defeated and yet still strike before the battle began. Reports from the Xenocides, those few transcripts spared total purging, contain instances of what the Inquisition has since deemed temporal fractures. Officers who died in one campaign appearing unaged in another, commanding forces they had supposedly never met. Planets secured, declared compliant, then suddenly never discovered in the first place. In one chilling entry from the Apocrypha of Alondra Theta, an entire Segmentum fleet reported returning from a successful Rangdan eradication, only for their parent sector to deny ever having deployed them. Worse still, none of the fleet's logs could be reconciled with known stardates. They had existed in a war that never happened, bearing wounds from battles against an enemy who, on paper, did not exist. The idea that the Rangdan could twist time is not just science fiction in this context. Consider the warp, a realm where time is fluid, where future, past, and present interlace like threads in a madness loom. Most warp-using species are barely capable of navigating this storm. The Eldar surfeits surface, and chaos embodies its chaos. But the Rangdan may have mastered it, or even worse, emerged from a place where time was never fixed to begin with. Their fleets did not travel through the warp. They may have emerged from it fully formed, temporal anchor points forged in some lost logic. Some theories claim the Rangdan were not actors in time, but agents of its erosion. They did not just win battles, they erased losses. Psychic data recall from trauma surviving Astartes paints further chilling imagery. One account from a Dark Angels librarian describes an entire battlefield aging into ruin within minutes. Men turning to dust, tanks rusting mid-charge, architecture collapsing into fossilized debris. Yet seconds later, the entire scene reset, but differently. Positions reversed, wounds healed, but with different scars. What war was this? Was it multiple wars? Were the Rangdan inducing microfractures in the time stream to test optimal outcomes as a strategist replays simulations? If true, the consequences are terrifying. It would mean the Rangdan did not perceive the Imperium as an opponent in space, but as a variable in a multidimensional equation. Their goal was not conquest, but control of probabilities. In this framework, the Emperor's intervention takes on a desperate tone, not just a military engagement, but an attempt to seal a breach in time itself. The battlefields of the Rangdan Xenocides may not have been places at all, but moments, entire histories quarantined like diseased code in the new sphere. Perhaps this is why the records were destroyed. Not because they were terrifying, but because they were unstable. To read them might be to invoke a war whose outcome is still undetermined. Perhaps the Rangdan left behind artifacts that are not relics, but triggers, echo devices that reopen paths best forgotten. The Inquisition's obsession with sealing anything linked to them in chronal stasis is not overkill, but containment. Time, once infected, does not heal easily. The Imperium has always clung to the past, to dogma, to relics, to the frozen imagery of golden triumphs. Against the Rangdan, even the past became unreliable. And in a universe where even the God Emperor's truth is rooted in the bedrock of history, what happens when history no longer obeys the rules? What if the greatest victory of the Imperium was not that it defeated the Rangdan, but that it convinced time to forget them? The tragedy of the Lost Legions, the 2nd and the 11th, has always been one of the deepest wounds in Imperial lore, marked only by silence and broken seals in ancient archives. Officially, they are unspoken, deleted from records with the same vehemence as the Rangdan themselves. The symmetry of that silence is telling. It is as if both were removed not for what they were, but for what they did or became. In this dreadful void of information, a theory arises, one that chills even the Inquisition, that the Rangdan conflict is the reason the 2nd and 11th legions were purged. To accept this is to challenge one of the few remaining certainties in Imperial history, that the Primarchs were the Emperor's greatest creations and their legions his mightiest tools. Yet what if two of those tools were broken against something so far beyond comprehension that even the Master of Mankind saw no path to redemption? It is recorded that during the height of the Rangdan Xenocides, the Emperor himself led a vast fleet into the Northern Voids. With him, though unconfirmed by any official doctrine, were the 2nd and 11th Legions, fresh from victories, but eager to prove themselves in a theater that promised no glory, only annihilation. The idea that these legions were expunged not for heresy or rebellion, but because of what the Rangdan did to them, is more than a convenient hypothesis. It is a haunting probability. Surviving accounts from Mechanicum observers, encoded under 10 layers of digital encryption, speak of Astartes formations exhibiting dissonant behavioral synchrony. Units that moved without orders, their cohesion too perfect, as if driven by a shared consciousness not native to them. Psykers within these legions began to exhibit unstable phenomena, broadcasting visions, not receiving them, their minds seemingly hijacked by something older and coldly analytical. Worse are the fragments suggesting that the legions began to change, that their gene seed, under Rangdan exposure, mutated at a conceptual level. It wasn't corruption like chaos, but something more insidious, a reprogramming. In one archive battlefield report, a squad of the 11th was found intact months after presumed death, constructing an unknown structure from salvaged debris. When approached, they could only say they were completing the sequence. No tactical motive, no strategic sense, only the impulse of a design not their own. The Primarchs themselves, their fates perhaps the greatest mystery, are speculated to have suffered worse. One version of the tale, recounted in bitter code by the Ordo Chronos, suggests that one Primarch was fractured, existing in multiple time states simultaneously. The other may have been seduced not by daemons, but by data, truths the Rangdan showed him about mankind, the galaxy, or perhaps the Emperor himself. Whatever they saw, whatever they learned, the result was not rebellion. It was collapse. Erasing them was the only option. Not punishment, but containment. If the Rangdan could not be unmade, then all who bore their touch had to be. And so the 2nd and 11th were stripped from memory, not by act of war, but by decree of mercy or terror. Their relics destroyed, their banners burned, their names reduced to numerals in forbidden texts. Their gene seed purged, their descendants, if any remained, hunted to extinction. The Emperor's sorrow, it is said, could be felt across the warp. But his resolve was greater still. Some scars are too deep to heal. Others must be cauterized with silence. And if this theory is true, then the Rangdan were not merely an enemy. They were a test. One the Imperium failed not through defeat, but through the cost of victory. Two legions lost, not in battle, but in identity. Not to chaos, but to something so alien it unmade even the idea of loyalty. That is perhaps the final horror, that we could be unmade without ever knowing we were changed. That some threats are not resisted, they are endured, and then buried in the deepest tomb of all, memory. When the Emperor steps onto a battlefield, it is not as a symbol, but as a force of nature. Throughout the Great Crusade, he operated from the strategic heights, crafting doctrine, deploying primarchs, forging empires through his chosen sons. But in the Rangdan Xenocides, he descended into the mire. This alone signals something dire. There are very few moments in recorded imperial history where the Emperor directly intervened with his own hand. Even the most brutal Orc wars or the darkest compliance actions did not merit his presence. That he chose to take the field against the Rangdan is a testament to how far beyond the pale they were. Those who believe this was a simple matter of overwhelming force miss the point entirely. The Emperor does not waste his divinity on trivial foes. His involvement suggests a deeper necessity, perhaps one psychic, perhaps one metaphysical. The prevailing theory among Ordo Malleus archivists is that the Rangdan represented not just a military threat, but an ontological contagion. Something in their essence violated the Emperor's vision of the Imperium. He had to be there not to kill, but to seal, to intervene at a level no Primarch could reach. Some even propose he was not fighting them in the material realm, but across dimensions, anchoring reality through sheer will where it threatened to unravel. The testimonies, fragmentary and forbidden, describe scenes so surreal they read like apocalyptic prophecy. In the Ghostlights Nebula, where the Emperor's fleet vanished for nearly 2 years, Vox ghosts still flicker with scraps of broadcast. Voices chanting in impossible languages, screams laced with reversed causality, sensor data that logs the death of a fleet hours before its last warp translation. It is here, some say, that the Emperor confronted the true Rangdan. Not the biomechanical constructs or ethereal horrors fought by Astartes, but the mind, or minds, behind them. This was not a duel of blades, but of ideation, a war of visions. And yet, he emerged. Changed, perhaps. Accounts differ. Some among the Adeptus Custodes, when forced to speak of it, refer to him in those days as distant, not physically altered, but as if bearing the weight of unseen wounds. A few in the Librarius, especially those linked to the early Grey Knights, whisper that the Emperor took something from the Rangdan. Not a weapon, but a burden. That he sealed a part of them within himself to prevent its escape. That the throne is not merely a life support system, but a vault, a prison for ideas too deadly to let loose. Others believe his personal involvement was also political, that he needed to lead the purge of knowledge as well as the war itself. For who else could issue the order to delete an enemy from history and ensure its obedience? The memory holocaust that followed the Xenocides was not the act of a faceless bureaucracy. It was surgical, precise, final, and undoubtedly sanctioned by the throne. This was not just about victory, it was about control. Perhaps the emperor realized in that war that victory alone is not enough, that survival sometimes demands the rewriting of truth. But even in this, questions persist. Why not commemorate the war, if only to warn future generations? Why not elevate it as a symbol of imperial resilience? Perhaps because the emperor knew the danger had not ended. That to speak of the Rangdan is to reawaken them, that they were not wholly destroyed, only suppressed, latent, like a viral code in the human genome. And only he, in his infinite psychic vigilance, could keep the lock closed. Thus, his presence in the Rangdan War was not a show of force, but a last resort. A firewall of divinity, engaged because no mortal flame could hold the line. When we say the Emperor stood against the Rangdan, we are not recounting a chapter of war. We are recounting an exorcism on a galactic scale. And if that is true, then perhaps the question is not why he fought, but what he left behind. In a galaxy filled with weapons that can turn suns into screams, it takes something truly extraordinary to disturb even the hardened cogitators of the Adeptus Mechanicus. The Rangdan arsenal, or what little is inferred of it, did precisely that. It was not just potent, it was alien in function, unclassifiable in origin, and catastrophic in application. The tech priests tasked with analyzing recovered Rangdan remnants found themselves speaking in paradoxes, using mathematical symbols invented on the spot just to model the ruin. What survived of these weapons was so dangerous that many were destroyed on sight, without study, not from caution, but from an instinctual revulsion. The few battlefield logs that mention Rangdan arms describe their weaponry in terms that border on the poetic and insane. Lances of reversed entropy, light that unbuilds, projectiles that sing their own negation. These are not the metaphors of poetic scribes, but the exact words of Mechanicum engineers, driven to madness, trying to categorize the uncategorizable. Some weapons did not fire at all, but induced failure. Complex machines would simply cease to function, as if convinced they had already served their purpose. Entire battalions of land raiders stalled mid-advance, their engines no longer remembering how to ignite. Of particular note are the rumors of soul-reactive weapons. These devices, believed to be wielded by elite Rangdan constructs or entities, were described as psycho-inversion beams, mechanisms that did not harm the body but reversed identity, will, and belief. One Iron Hand survivor spoke of an entire platoon turning their bolters on themselves, not from fear, but from a calm, enlightened certainty that they were the enemy. The Ordo Xenos, in the scant records they preserve, mark these as thanatropic resonators, weapons that interact directly with nuspheric data, rewriting thought in real time. Then there are the biological weapons, if they can be called that. Some Rangdan technologies were not tools at all, but living intelligences. Spore storms that moved with tactical awareness, nanoorganisms that mimicked not just flesh but strategy. One Astartes account tells of a black mist that infiltrated Vox systems, learned battlefield orders, then issued counter-commands using the voices of dead commanders. These were not viruses. They were thinkers, strategists, using human infrastructure against itself like a symphony of sabotage. Even worse are the alleged anti-Astartes agents. Some sources suggest that the Rangdan developed or uncovered substances that could unbind gene seed stability. These toxins, biochemical or psychic in nature, would cause rapid atavism or regression, turning space marines into feral remnants of their former selves. These weren't mere poisons, they were deconstructions, the very programming of the legions, undone by exposure to thoughts encoded in molecules. There are fragments in the Mechanicum data vaults, redacted of course, which theorize that Rangdan weapons were not crafted but harvested. That the Rangdan found these devices in the dead vaults of a prior universe, or perhaps conjured them through collective will. Some speculate their arsenal was semi-sentient, not controlled but negotiated with. That the Rangdan did not wield their weapons so much as they invited them, asked them to act, and they obeyed. This interpretation aligns disturbingly well with the few relics that were brought back for study. Every such object caused localized corruption, not in the sense of decay, but of uncertainty. Rooms would change configuration, machines would deny their own blueprints, priests would forget how to pray, The very presence of Rangdan Tech warped causality in minor, yet irreversible ways. Eventually, the Inquisition declared a zero-tolerance doctrine. Any Rangdan artifact, regardless of potential value, was to be incinerated or spaced into the void immediately upon discovery. Which begs the question, what manner of species builds weapons that even the Imperium dares not understand? What kind of mind crafts tools that dismantle perception, rewire loyalty, and seduce identity itself? The Rangdan were not just warriors. They were artisans of entropy, poets of annihilation, sculptors of madness. Their arsenal was not designed to kill the body. It was made to dismantle the possibility of resistance. And in that, perhaps more than anywhere else, lies the answer to why they were erased. For some weapons are not content to end lives. Some seek to rewrite them. There are scars that do not fade, even on transhuman flesh. The legions who fought in the Rangdan Xenocides were not just tested, they were transformed, marked forever by the encounter with something that defied every known category of war. Among these, three stand out for the scale of their sacrifice and the depth of their trauma: the Night Lords, the Dark Angels, and the Iron Hands. Each entered the crucible of the Xenocides as something recognizable. Each emerged altered in ways that would echo across the centuries to come. The Night Lords, under the merciless vision of Conrad Kurz, were deployed into the Rangdan War during the height of their operational maturity. Unlike later campaigns defined by terror tactics and psychological domination, the Night Lords at this stage were still idealists, albeit brutal ones. But the Rangdan offered no minds to terrify, no societies to subjugate. The enemy had no fear, no hierarchy, no morality. The Night Lords, born to make the shadows scream, found themselves confronting a silence that could not be broken. Reports from their librarians suggest they encountered something worse than resistance: indifference. Their terror tactics not only failed, but were often met with eerie mimicry. Rangdan constructs would echo their vox threats back to them, subtly altered to reflect fears the Night Lords themselves had not voiced aloud. This psychological mirroring broke their confidence, and perhaps even Kurz's fragile sanity further. The Dark Angels suffered in body and soul. Their deployments into Rangdan sectors were marked by a level of attrition more severe than even the later siege worlds. Lionel Johnson himself is believed to have led assaults on what came to be called the Black Holds, planetary fortresses where Rangdan entities were embedded into the crust, like tumors in a dying god. These were not strongholds to be taken, but excised, like malignancies. The Dark Angels fought in total darkness, in gravity-warped tunnels, against enemies that could be in front of them and behind them simultaneously. It is said the First Legion emerged victorious, but what they brought back was something else. Their need for secrecy, their later obsession with the Fallen, all of it may trace its root to this campaign. They did not merely confront corruption. They may have internalized it. And then, the Iron Hands. Their mechanized efficiency should have made them ideal candidates for Rangdan eradication. Their logic, their lack of sentiment, all of it should have rendered them immune to psychological assault. But the Rangdan proved logic was a door, not a wall. What began as straightforward battles of attrition devolved into contests of control. Iron Hands units found their augmetics behaving erratically. Targeting systems flickered with images not of Rangdan, but of fellow Astartes. Machine spirits became silent. Whole squads were lost to technical self-determination, their implants taking over and leading them into the heart of Rangdan kill zones without orders. Some theorize the Rangdan didn't hack their systems. They communicated with them on a level even the Mechanicus couldn't perceive. Veterans of the Rangdan Xenocides from these legions were rarely reintegrated. Many were rotated to remote fronts or assigned to chapters where their trauma would not infect others. Some simply disappeared. Others became pariahs even among their own brothers. Yet their doctrines changed. The Night Lords grew darker, more fatalistic. The Dark Angels retreated into ritual and secrecy. The Iron Hands abandoned empathy altogether, becoming the cold, mechanical force we know today. It is as if the Rangdan didn't just hurt them, they rewrote them. It is no accident that the Inquisition maintains extensive surveillance over successor chapters from these three lines. The shadow of the Rangdan still lingers in their tactics, in their dreams, in the things they do not say. Each of these legions faced an enemy that showed them not just death, but a mirror. One that reflected not what they were, but what they could become. And none of them liked what they saw, so they broke the mirror. But the cracks remain. Among the Warp's countless nightmares, few entities inspire such visceral dread as the Psychnuan, soul-eating insectoids that implant their larvae into psychers and feed on the echoes of consciousness itself. Officially categorized as Xenos, their presence is rare and localized, and the Imperium treats their incursions with immediate, brutal containment. But to some within the Ordo Xenos and the Librarius Arcana, the Psychnuan are more than a tragic footnote. They may be the last surviving shard of the Rangdan, or perhaps their progeny. This theory, whispered in censored corridors, proposes that the Psychnuan are not merely similar to the Rangdan in function. They are fragments, splinters, remnants that escape the purging. The Psychnuan exhibit several features that match descriptions of Rangdan behavior during the Xenocides. Chief among them is their predation on thought itself. The Rangdan were said to manipulate belief, identity, and perception as easily as other species manipulate matter. The Psychnuan, while bestial in form, possess this same uncanny talent. Victims do not just die, they are rewritten, used, and their psychic residues fed upon in rituals that resemble information harvesting more than mere feeding. Their larvae induce not physical decay, but philosophical collapse. Hosts lose their sense of self long before their bodies rot. This mirrors accounts of Rangdan conversion fields, zones where Imperial forces abandoned their mission and began chanting in alien logic. Additionally, Psychnuan hives exhibit bizarre temporal anomalies. Certain encounters involve nests appearing in areas previously purged, as if they phase in and out of alignment with reality. Reports of entire ships or stations infested with them, despite no breach being recorded, suggest not physical invasion, but dimensional bleeding, exactly the kind of chronal fractures that accompanied Rangdan offensives. One theory suggests the Psychnuan are not fully real in the way we understand it, that like the Rangdan, they exist partially outside our frame of time, feeding on moments as much as minds. Perhaps most compelling are the few forbidden Psyker recordings, always destroyed after debriefing, where Psychnuan larvae have been observed speaking. Not in language, but in psionic broadcast. In some cases, the voices are those of Rangdan war commanders, known only from sealed records. In others, the entities issue commands in structured sequences, identical to Rangdan military rituals found deep in the Mechanicus lexicons. The probability of parallel development is so low it beggars belief. If this theory holds, then the Psychnuan are not merely similar, they are an echo, a postscript of the Rangdan war still feeding on our edges. And what of the soul matter they consume? Some posit that the Psychnuan are a continuation of Rangdan goals, a slower, subtler invasion. Not through conquest, but through infestation of the psychic lattice of humanity. Every Psyker taken is not a loss, but an addition to the great signal, the conceptual engine that the Rangdan once used to reshape reality. The larvae are described in some texts as psychic keys, turning the locks of local warp space, unlocking modes of thought no human mind should endure. This connection, if true, changes everything. It means the Rangdan war never ended. It only changed shape. The large-scale confrontations, the planetary exterminations, those were the fevered peak. But now, the infection persists in spores and whispers, in crawl spaces and thought forms. The Imperium's response to the Psychnuan reflects this dread. Every encounter is met with disproportionate force. Cities are burned, entire subsectors quarantined, and Psykers, the Imperium's most precious resource, are exterminated without hesitation if exposed. The fear is not of the bugs, it is of what they remember. It is possible then that the Psychnuan are the Rangdan's last revenge, or their first scout. That each hive is a seed, slowly unfurling a new kind of war. Not fought in stars and steel, but in thought and soul. The Rangdan may be gone, but their hunger remains. And in the Psychnuan, it is learning to grow once more. There are places in the galaxy where light dares not shine, not because of distance or obstruction, but because of decree. In the vaults beneath Terra, in the forbidden catacombs of Mars, in black ships that never return, there are texts so ancient and so dangerous that their very presence bends the air around them. Among these are the surviving whispers of the Rangdan. Not in complete books, never in full codices, but in fragments, torn pages, cracked data slabs, and corrupted, noospheric echoes that speak of the thing the Imperium tried hardest to forget. The Horus Heresy Black Books are among the few semi-official records that even glance in the Rangdan's direction. They reference the Xenocides as catastrophic campaigns, fought at the brink of sanity and waged with fire and fear. But the texts are evasive. They speak in passive tense, avoid direct naming, and often overwrite themselves with "see redacted source theta null." The careful scholar, however, can trace patterns in the void. Mentions of entire battle groups vanishing, reports from Mechanicum forces that refer to enemy logic contagions, tactical readouts that end with prayer. The most infamous of these texts is the so-called Ezekiel Codex, a scorched and pieced-together manuscript housed beneath Titan, allegedly written by a pre-heresy librarian driven to the brink of death by Rangdan exposure. It does not describe them. It refuses. Every attempt ends in looping verse or visual hallucination. But what it does offer are images, symbols scratched in ferrosteel, phrases repeated in dream state by the author. They are the grammar of ruin. They are the architects of thought collapse. One chapter ends with a simple phrase repeated 37 times: "We must not think them into being." Other texts, buried in the sublevels of the Ordo Redactus and the black vaults of the Adeptus Mechanicus, treat the Rangdan not as a species, but as a category, a classification of anomaly. In these tomes, the Rangdan are given code names: Omega Apostate, Heuristic Nullifiers, Echo Forms. One particularly arcane tablet found on a dead world near the Halo Stars is thought to be a Rangdan artifact. It emits low-frequency temporal pulses that distort memory in its vicinity. This so-called tongue of dust is sealed within a multi-dimensional vault. Those who have attempted to decode its contents either vanished or entered stasis voluntarily, citing auditory hallucinations from a being behind the being. There is even an apocryphal Imperial cultist document, now banned across three sectors, that worships the Rangdan as anti-angels, heralds not of damnation, but liberation from the illusion of causality. The book, titled The Unbinding Gospel, was reportedly derived from notes copied off a derelict explorator vessel adrift in Rangdan-infested space. It postulates that the Rangdan are not monsters, but corrective forces, the fingers of truth brushing away the chalk lines of the lie called reality. The Inquisition has purged every known copy, but fragments appear, always fragments, as if the book writes itself where fear allows. In the end, these texts do not clarify, they confuse. They do not describe, they disorient. That is their power, and perhaps their purpose. The Rangdan do not survive in lore the way other Xenos threats do. They do not appear in military annals or saintly martyrdoms. They exist only in the cracks, in the moments between pages, where data corruption is too symmetrical to be natural. Their erasure was nearly perfect. But perfection, in a galaxy as decayed as this one, is suspicious. It implies not just power, but intent. These forbidden texts are not dangerous because they lie. They are dangerous because they remember. They are relics of a war not recorded, scars of a wound the Imperium cannot admit to having. To study them is to reach back toward a trauma buried so deep it became part of the spine. But some seek them still, not for knowledge but for warning. For if the Rangdan are returning, or if they never truly left, then those black books may be our only chance to understand the rules of a game already in play. Some nightmares do not end with waking. The Rangdan Xenocides may have been buried, excised from record, but their echoes continue to shape the Imperium in ways most do not recognize. Like a psychic scar across the soul of mankind, their influence lingers, in paranoia, in doctrine, in the very shape of the Imperium's fear. What we know, or rather what we are allowed to infer, is that something changed after the Xenocides. Not just in the legions, not just in the Emperor, but in the very fabric of Imperial policy. Before the Rangdan War, the Imperium was on a trajectory of expansion and enlightenment. Brutal, yes, but confident. The Great Crusade was a flame pushing outward, illuminating the dark. After the Rangdan, the light turned inward. Whole areas of space were abandoned, quarantined without cause. Navigators were instructed to avoid certain warp corridors. Star charts were redrawn to exclude entire systems. The Imperium became less a conquering empire and more a fortress, a realm suddenly aware that some things should not be touched, some frontiers should not be crossed. This shift is visible in the sudden proliferation of protocols surrounding Zeno's contact. The post-Rangdan period saw the foundation of the Ordo Xenos, not as a response to the Eldar or Orcs, those were manageable threats, but to deal with the unknown. Not to fight, but to prevent knowledge from spreading. The Decree Obscura, rarely invoked, was written in this era, a mandate that allows planetary exterminatus on the grounds of informational contamination. What kind of threat could justify that? Only one whose very memory is a danger. You see it too in the treatment of psychic phenomena. After the Rangdan, there was a hard pivot in how the Imperium handled psychers. The black ships grew more frequent, the scrutiny harsher, the cullings broader. It's as if the Rangdan had taught the Imperium something it couldn't unlearn. That psychic power was not merely dangerous, but vulnerable. Not a strength, but a doorway. And whatever had passed through that doorway during the Xenocides was not entirely gone. The sheer scale of post-war purges, of scholars, of historians, of even Mechanicus data curators, tells us the fear was not just of enemies, but of thoughts, of patterns repeating. Even in the Ecclesiarchy, which did not exist during the Great Crusade, we find Rangdan-shaped paranoia. The prohibition against certain numerologies, the excision of conceptual heresies, the intense fear of inverted dogma, all trace back to psi linguistic frameworks first codified during the war. Some scholars believe that modern heresy law is not about belief at all, but about mimetic containment. That the church's obsession with orthodoxy is less about worship and more about cognitive hygiene, about preventing the recurrence of whatever it was the Rangdan infected the human mind with. Most chilling of all is the concept of the silent protocols, rarely spoken of even in inquisitorial circles. These are rumored contingency plans to erase entire subsectors if Rangdan signs reemerge, not for tactical reasons, but prophylactic. It is said there are sleeper inquisitors embedded across the Segmentum Pacificus, not to fight, but to silence, instantly, totally. The Rangdan threat is not imagined to be over. It is imagined to be dormant, like a virus hidden in the DNA of the Imperium itself. The legacy of the Rangdan, then, is not just caution, it is institutionalized amnesia. A culture of forgetting as policy, of ignorance as armor. We have built our defenses not only in steel and prayer, but in curated blindness. And in that blindness, the Rangdan remain powerful. They are not dead, they are not gone. They are a shape in the corner of our vision, a word we are trained not to read, a story half told in a language we dare not speak. We live in an empire of scars. Every edifice of the Imperium, every cathedral spire, every skull-stamped parchment and proclamation of purity is built atop centuries of trauma. Yet among these countless tragedies, the Rangdan stand apart, not because of what they did, but because of what we refuse to remember. We are told they were vanquished, yet their name is unspoken. We are told the Imperium is eternal, yet a war was waged so terrible that even eternity flinched. This is not history. This is an absence, and in that absence we find the deepest fear of all, that there are enemies not meant to be defeated, but forgotten. But we cannot afford to forget. The galaxy today is on fire. The Cicatrix Maledictum splits the stars in twain. Daemons walk where men once dreamed. Xeno's empires rise anew, wielding technologies and philosophies that challenge the decaying dogma of a 10,000-year lie. In such times, the temptation to retreat into familiar ignorance is overwhelming. It is safer, we are told, to burn the books, to silence the questions, to worship the blind instead of seeking the truth. But the Rangdan teach us a lesson more brutal than any sermon. What we erase may not stay gone. What we choose to forget may be the very thing we must face again, and we will not be ready. Perhaps the Rangdan were defeated, perhaps they were contained, sealed in some impossible vault by the Emperor's own will. Perhaps the erasure worked, and we are truly safe. But history suggests otherwise. The forbidden texts persist, the psychnoin feed, the silence deepens, and with it, the unease. The Rangdan are not a tale of conquest, they are a parable of hubris, a reminder that there are truths too dangerous for dogma, threats too complex for purity seals and burning promethium. We must remember not to glorify, not to emulate, but to prepare. If they return, it will not be in fleets of fire or phalanxes of horror. It will be in uncertainty, in identity crisis, in thoughts you didn't plant, in histories that rearrange themselves, in wars that begin without a cause and end without memory. And when that moment comes, when the whisper returns to the void, when the mirror flickers once more, we must be ready to see it, to say its name. Because the Emperor knew. He knew that some battles cannot be won in the moment. They must be won across centuries, across remembrance. The Rangdan were erased so we might live, but we must remember so we might survive. Even when the last records are burned and the last witness silenced, history leaves fingerprints in the cracks. And sometimes those cracks run deeper than we expect. While the Rangdan have been erased from conventional annals, there are signs, subtle, scattered, persistent, that their influence has never truly left the Imperium. They are not just a memory suppressed. They are a pressure still shaping the present. The Imperium is haunted, not only by daemons, but by what it refuses to name. And in those quiet corners, behind repressed myths and protocol anomalies, the Rangdan may yet be working. Consider the strange uptick in unclassified Xenos incidents in the Segmentum Pacificus over the last 5 centuries. Dozens of planets report inexplicable data loss events, behavioral anomalies among colonists, and sudden mass desertions without external attack. In one case, a Mechanicus expedition lost all sense of linear time, their logs repeating weeks of identical entries, written in different script each time. The Ordo Chronos sealed the site, citing Type Zetum Nemo contagion. No known species aligns with this pattern. But the descriptions echo one wordless memory, Rangdan. Then there are the Grey Silence campaigns, a series of conflicts fought by the Death Watch and select Astra Militarum regiments, often in complete blackout from Imperial command. These operations are scrubbed from standard reports, and the only traces appear in indirect requisitions. Massive quantities of null warded ammunition, increased black ship traffic in proximity, and sudden resettlement of entire sectors under the pretense of cultural dissonance remediation. It is said that in these campaigns, the enemy is not visible, not even local. The threat lies in recurrence, thoughts circling through populations like a virus, reframing reality in ways too subtle to track until it is too late. Some tech priests have begun to question the origin of certain failed STC fragments recovered from deep space. Their design logic is incompatible with human tech cultures, yet eerily mirrored. Tools designed to think their own unmaking. Constructs with no purpose, but introspective decay. These fragments resist analysis, not through encryption, but through semiotic defiance. They rearrange their meaning with every attempt to catalog them. When placed near active cogitators, even high-grade logi engines begin outputting philosophical riddles, many of which match surviving Rangdan aphorisms. It is not proof, but it is warning. And yet the most disturbing possibility is this. What if the Rangdan were never fully external? What if they were not merely enemies to be fought, but forces to be internalized, catalysts for change? The rise of the Inquisition, the absolute control of knowledge, the dogmatic brutality of the ecclesiarchy. All these grew more intense after the Rangdan's disappearance. Did we win that war? Or did we survive it only by becoming something else? The Rangdan might be best understood not as a species or a threat, but as a transformation, a pressure applied to civilization that reveals what it will sacrifice to endure. For the Imperium, that sacrifice was truth. It chose stability over clarity, dogma over knowledge. But that choice comes at a cost. And if the Rangdan still whisper, if their legacy still twists the thoughts of wayward psychers and distorts the dreams of voidfarers, then that cost may yet be rising. What then is the true defense? Bolters cannot fire at memories. Titans cannot crush forgotten symbols. The only weapon we may possess against what the Rangdan represented is vigilance, not just against them, but against our own impulse to forget. Because forgetting is weakness. Forgetting is surrender. And in the far future where there is only war, memory may be the last true resistance. We have named them the unnameable, dared remember what was forbidden. But now comes the harder task, to carry that knowledge forward. Not to shout it from the battlements, but to keep it alive, quietly, relentlessly. Because in every silence there is a seed. And some seeds grow into darkness, others grow into light. Subscribe for more forbidden truths, for deeper dives into the ghosts of the Great Crusade and the shadows they still cast. For only in darkness can the light of knowledge truly shine. And in this galaxy, we will need every flicker we can kindle.